On a Friday, it is January 3rd. This is Audio Matters. I'm George Prentice in for Gemma Gaudette. Our universe has millions of stories to tell, from the stars to our planet's past and our moon's future. Astronomers are our storytellers, taking what they learn and sharing it with us. One of those storytellers is Dr. Jay Greer. She studies impact craters for the Planetary Science Institute. And get this, she's also a poet and a sci-fi writer. She says she's learning all sorts of stories from the impact crater she studies. Dr. Greer is in Boise for the Boise State Physics First Friday Astronomy Talk. That is tonight at 7:30, and we're lucky that she can join us in studio. Hi.
Hello. It's great to be here.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. Thanks for having me.
I was reminded this Christmas of my famous favorite Christmas present.
Which was?
A telescope.
That is a fantastic present.
It was a junior telescope, but you can imagine, I mean, this was more than a half a century ago, so telescopes weren't half as nice as they are now. But it was the most exciting year of my life, just going outside when it was cold, when it was snowing, obviously in the summer, et cetera, just staring at the stars.
Mm-hmm. What did you like to look at the most?
The moon.
The moon, of
because
course.
This was before we started sending rockets to the moon. That's how old I am. I guess where I'm going with this is, what led you to the stars?
Something very similar, combination of things. One of the very first of those is that my older brother also had a telescope. Mm. And he did not object to taking his little sister out one night when I was 9 years old and I saw Saturn. And when I was 9 years old and I saw Saturn, I said, I want to study planets. And I never changed my mind.
What do you tell a stranger what you do for a living?
Yeah, that depends on how long you want the conversation to go. Mm. If you say,
well,
hey.
Not too long.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, say, yeah. Hey, I study the surface of the moon. The conversation is great. That goes on and on. You say, oh, yeah, I'm an astrophysicist. That usually shuts things down.
Does it really? Gosh, I think I would go forever on astrophysics, but I study the moon. But you're a poet and a sci-fi writer?
Yes.
Help me
yes.
out with that.
You know, I think there's a misconception that these are two very different worlds. One of the things we have to do as scientists is be extremely creative. We have to synthesize data in new ways. We have to come up with new ideas. We have to be very innovative about where we want to go and why and how to get there. Mm-hmm. And all those same creative instincts come out in art. A lot of us are artists, whether that's visual arts or written arts. I am not unusual in our field for being an artist.
But talk to me about your poetry first.
Oh, I see. I think for myself, it's a fantastic way to link these two creative aspects. Mm-hmm. So I do poetry in all sorts of weird, strange realms like science fiction, fantasy, horror, weird. Also straight science poetry and other kind of creative nonfiction.
Do you do readings?
I do. Yes, absolutely. And matter of fact, some of our professional conferences have open mic nights where I have done readings there.
And your sci-fi? Give me a taste of that.
You know, a lot of that is explorations of different ideas that I have in my own mind that you know, you can't experience in the real world. We have a limited context. So you get a chance to say, what if, in science fiction?
We used to think that the 50s and 60s were the golden age for sci-fi, but I would think that we might be living in almost a platinum age right now for sci-fi in all forms of the arts.
I think one of the exciting things that I'm seeing in science fiction is the diversity of perspective.
Yeah.
What we were given back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s when we were looking at science fiction was a very limited view. And now we have people from all over the world, all walks of life, who are providing us new, different ideas about what the future could look like.
Let's talk about impact craters.
I would love to.
And is that exactly what it sounds like, craters?
Yeah.
From impacts from...
Yeah, it's
that have crashed into the
things running into things.
What can we learn from impact craters?
Well, when things run into things, sometimes they leave a scar, and in this case, it's a circular scar, and material gets thrown out, and that's called ejecta. And I study those scars on Earth, mostly on the Moon these days, and then occasionally on some of the worlds like asteroids. And we can learn a lot of things.
Give me a big aha moment in that.
Oh, wow, an aha moment. For example, the Earth turns over materials a lot. We've got rain and wind and volcanism that destroys our history, our geologic history over time, as new history gets in place. The moon doesn't have a lot of that going on. No atmosphere, no rain. So things get preserved for a long, long time. Mm. So I can look at craters on the moon and say, how often do things come into the Earth-Moon system? So I can't really tell by looking at Earth's cratering record, but I can tell by looking at the moon's cratering record. And I can say, this is more or less, you know, probable.
And your research goes where?
Oh, well, in terms of who's interested in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Where does it end up?
I end up, my funding agency is usually NASA, sometimes NSF or other agencies, but mostly NASA. That research, the technical part of the research goes into, research journals. Mm. But in fact, the best part of the research happens right here, right now with you, where I get a chance to say, this is why this is important.
You've spent some time in Norway.
Which
is beautiful. I've been there, but you've been there professionally. Talk about your work there.
Yes, actually, I have to give the credit to the collecting of the samples at that impact crater in Norway, the Gardnås impact structure in Norway.
Give me a word picture. What size are we talking about?
Oh gosh, it's large enough that it has like a lake and a town in it.
What?
That's how big the impact crater is.
I'm sorry, there's a town where people live
inside
the crater?
Inside the impact crater. Yes, they did not recognize it.
What's the name of this crater?
Gardnås.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
You have my full attention.
Yes. Well, it's very old, but people couldn't quite figure out how old it was, because in the time since that crater had formed, the European continent and the North American continent had run into each other and created mountains. In the case of the United States, what got built was the Appalachians, among other things. So that was the event that caused that to happen. So we're talking hundreds of millions of years in the past. That mountain building happened, and all these sediments ended up in the bottom of this depression, and nobody knew there was a crater there for a long time.
Where can we learn more about this?
I wonder. You know, Gardnås, if you go on the internet.
How do you spell it?
G-A-R-D-O, Gardnås, N-O-S. I'm going to spell it in my head.
We are Googling that
as
you speak.
They have a meteorite visitor park there. So, in fact, you can walk trails, and they have curated exhibits about the meteorite impact there.
What living, breathing kid doesn't want to be you?
Oh, gosh.
Wow.
Well, I really do have a good job. Yeah. Actually, all of us in planetary and astronomy.
And what's the answer with how can I be you?
There are a lot of ways to come to where I am, the path that I took. There is no one path. I got a bachelor's degree in astronomy. I got a PhD in planetary science. But you could say, I want to do computer programming for spacecraft. You could come through computer science. You could be a chemist or a geologist. I mean, think about around here. You've got Craters of the Moon Park, right out of the Snake River Plain. Yeah, and those are two things that craters and big basalt flows, big old cooled lava flows.
Apollo astronauts actually trained.
Yes, they certainly did. Yeah. Absolutely they did, because these places are so much like the places we see on the moon. Yeah. So you could learn that and be on your way.
Do you have a sense of the future of space exploration? We're in interesting times.
Mm-hmm.
Those of us of a certain age, remember when it was just growing, mm-hmm. and we were reaching for the stars every day, and mm-hmm. kids were so engaged. And then NASA funding starts mm-hmm. to slip away, mm-hmm. et cetera. Mm-hmm. And now we're talking about, weaponizing space.
Yeah,
Space Force, right? Do you have a sense of where we are?
Well, I think that, first of all, the idea of space in the military context is by no means new. Mm. That's been with us since before Sputnik, actually. And so that.
Yeah, but we're talking about significant funding now is about to happen.
I think in a lot of cases, I'll believe it when I see it.
Okay.
Because in the case of the space program, I mean, NASA is in the an executive branch of government. And so every administration has a great deal of control over the agenda. Every administration changes the agenda because they would like to, have their personal take and personal signature on that.
Yeah.
So sometimes NASA has to change its priorities on short notice. It means that some programs don't make it the whole way. So I have a little bit of skepticism. When I see a program, I see it. When I don't, I wait for it.
Yes. Space is so fascinating. And then we hear Space Force, and it's like,
I am skeptical, and yeah. But of course, as a scientist, the things I do know the most about are things related to, you know, what our goals are, and those, you know, we're just getting more better ideas all the time about what our scientific goals in the you know, exploration should be. We're a lot better with robotic exploration. You know, the focus from Apollo, of course, was very much human oriented, and the idea
absolutely.
Of, you know, putting humans places is very exciting, but putting robots places is a lot cheaper and a lot less risk, and we can learn a tremendous amount by using our robotic space.
And our lives changed in so many dramatic ways.
Right, right.
Lives were saved because of the work that we did in the space program.
Yes, yes.
And goodness knows, we talked about the conveniences, et cetera. But the human condition did improve mm-hmm. because of the space program.
Yes, and besides looking away from things like spin-off technologies or treatments or things like that, or products that have been made, I really think that when a civilization stops funding this view, this vision of the future, that's a sign that the civilization is in big trouble. You have to be able to have hope and to look forward to the future.
She is Dr. Jay Greer, and she's from the Planetary Science Institute, and she's in Boise. She'll be participating in the First Friday Astronomy Talk tonight at 7:30 at BSU. Boy, that sounds like a blast.
It's going to be great.
Yeah, I am so glad you're here, and I'm your excitement is transcendent. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me here, and thanks to everyone who donates so that this talk series can happen.
Wonderful. Idaho Matters continues in a moment.